we had this challenge of, migrating a massive platform customer base over to this new Lightning experience that was going to increase, their usability, increase their consistency, all the stuff, right? Make them more productive.
That is Brandon Ferua, a UX architect for the design system here at Salesforce. I'm Josh Burke, a developer evangelist with Salesforce, and here on the Salesforce Developer Podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Now, today we're going to sit down with Brandon and talk about the history of the Lightning design system, what a design system really means, and a cool new feature in the form of styling hooks. But before we get going, I personally want to thank everybody who participated in our podcast survey. We have finished that. The results are in. I was delighted to read a lot of your feedback. I've taken some notes, but also just really glad that a lot of people seem to be really enjoying the podcast. And so I want to thank everybody who participated. And I also just want to thank everybody for listening. This is our 50th episode. And when we first started putting the show together years ago, we've been trying to think about what a podcast would look like. And at one point, I honestly wasn't even sure if we would have 50 episodes. So I just wanted to take a pause and just say that it's been great to get here. And my goal is definitely to give you at least 50 more episodes in the future. Now, getting back to the show, we start with the history of SLDS, which actually began a little bit before the Lightning experience.
It started a little bit before that. Okay. It was actually around the time when we rolled out the first S1 mobile experience. So I'm trying to remember what year that was. It was before I got here, but that was where some of the team, Zonko Rode and Gina Ann, who were running a team that was kind of conceptualizing what like a source of truth could be for design, right? Like that's where the first introduction of what we refer to now as design tokens was conceptualized. Gotcha. And that was a way to just provide a source of truth that both designers can reference and engineers could use that could say like, hey, Salesforce brand blue is this color. And if you use this token, you'll kind of maintain that consistency across all of the products and platforms. So that's where that kind of, hey, we have a problem that we need to solve was exposed at that time. And then as the Lightning experience was being considered and conceptualized, we kind of used that as opportunity to kind of like broaden the scope of the design system and actually build and distribute code that was otherwise we weren't able to do with the mobile experience, but with the desktop experience, we were able to do.
And it's interesting, it actually took a conversation. I was working with Gina at a world tour and she was going to do a presentation. And I think now it's been so long since those Wild West days of like the Salesforce one. I remember like there was the Bootstrap project. Like if you wanted to make your VisualForce page look like Salesforce one, you would load like this theme for Bootstrap basically. And it's like, and then like going into what a design system actually is and like the maturity of that experience and the organization. So, so I guess let's knock out a couple terms for people. First of all, what makes a design system a design system?
So that's a great question because I think over the years, we've been trying to discover what does that term mean? And it meant different things for different people. But I think to us, what it means is it's a mechanism that like a centralized kind of foundational way that we can communicate out basically design decisions and document and store that source of truth that I'm referring to, not only code-wise, but also design documentation. So it's a platform in which we want to capture what are consistent kind of user experience patterns that we see within our product, store it, centralize it, so then all teams can kind of reap the benefits of the work that was done around that particular pattern. The next is the accessibility aspect of it. It was a way for us to kind of document what our standards are in terms of accessibility and how we expect our product to perform from an accessibility standpoint. And then the last piece is kind of the engineering side, and the team that I work on is just, we wanted a way to kind of take those design decisions and accessibility decisions and actually distribute a code out of that, right? And so that's where we started creating what we refer to as component blueprints, because at the time we wanted to have as large of a impact and scope that we could. So we wanted to build an agnostic product that could be used, say, within the Aura platform, or it could be used off platform, say in like React or Angular, whatever the new cool framework was at the time, right?
Right.
And it was a way just to enable customers to kind of build their products to look and feel like the lightning like experience, lightning was going, but then also have our design decisions kind of baked into that code, right? And so it was just a way for us to kind of document and communicate design decisions through code.
Yeah. Well, and a couple of follow-ups there, but one is I just want to show the appreciation in like the structure of the naming convention as opposed to back to those like Bootstrap days when it was like, you know, I think it was named off of things that maybe was like had been abused back in Classic or something like that. so that's so much more modern. Also, so you mentioned semantic HTML and accessibility, and listeners from the old days of the podcast might remember Adam Brodebeck talking about how like semantic HTML is kind of like the best foot forward right now for building accessibility friendly components. Was this the first time, like was Lightning Experience really kind of the first time that we really started getting organized around that?
Yeah, I would say so. At least from like my knowledge and understanding of, I mean, it's always been a goal, and like we've had a dedicated team that was primarily used as a consultants for our internal developers kind of building our products. And it was just, I think it was a way where, you know, we have some product requirements that we have to meet a certain kind of baseline of how accessible our product is. And that is, you know, we want to make sure that we provide just an inclusive experience for our customers, regardless of, you know, whatever type of, you know, if a keyboard user, visually impaired, you know, there's a lot that needs to be taken into consideration, and we take it very seriously. And, you know, I think it was a way for us to kind of take a holistic look at how inaccessible maybe the previous product, i.e. Classic, might have been, and, you know, use it to kind of reinvent ourselves and being kind of a thought leader in the accessibility space.
Gotcha. And then one more definition, because I think it's going to come up later. What's a design token and how do they work?
A design token. So it's a cool name, but what it really is a platform agnostic design property stored in code. And what I mean by that is, if it might register more with our audience here today, where it's basically just a name and a value pairing. So we have this tool that we built in-house called Theo. What that does is we basically take design properties that, after working with our design team, say Salesforce Blue, we'll just use that as a great example. we want to create a semantic name for what the semantic value is. So in this case, you know, I think we have a naming pattern of how design tokens are kind of created. So in this case, it would just be like color brand is a really rudimentary example of it. And that stores our brand blue. And what that does is we give it to the Theo tool, and it generates platform specific files. So we can manage one single source of truth, but then the Aura platform can understand that value. iOS can understand that value. Android can understand that value, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we can add as many platforms that we want, but, you know, but it's a way for us to kind of make, so if we ever change that,
so kind of like a dictionary value for the various decisions you've made.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because, you know, we have a very complex system that we're building for, and we have our customers are building complex solutions to their problems. And so we had to have a way to quickly roll out changes if we needed to do so. And one way, like a great example, I think, is if, you know, there was, you know, we wanted to like darken our brand blue a little bit in the product, just to make it a little bit more accessible. And we were able to make just like one change, and it kind of propagated throughout the entire system. So that's like the cool thing design tokens. But it goes beyond color too. Like, we store like text values, text sizing, spacing values, all that type of stuff. So
But I like that example for a podcast, because when you say Salesforce Blue, people can visualize that very easily.
Yeah, we have some crazy ones in there, but Salesforce Blue, I think everyone could probably understand.
Right. Okay. So when this is starting to roll out and Lightning Experience is starting to roll out, what were some of the core products and I guess the users that you were specifically designing for?
At the time, it was for our flagship kind of CRM product. So primarily it was like sales, kind of the sales cloud, service cloud product that we were focused on, because at the time that they were the first adopters of the Lightning Experience.
Lightning Experience.
Yeah. But over time, I think that has grown.
Yeah, that was kind of my follow-up question is like, how have you seen like multiple personas in use cases as adoption has grown over the years?
Yeah, you know, I have personally have seen it, the complexity of the system kind of grow due to the fact that more people wanted to get on and migrate to the Lightning Experience because of all the benefits that it provided, especially nowadays that we have Lightning Web Components. I mean, people are excited about that and want to use it. They're building, you know, awesome products and applications off of that framework, right? And so, you know, especially over the years as the company has grown, you know, with, you know, certain, say, you know, yeah, we laugh. It's just like, it seems like.
Right. It's like the elephant in the room when it comes to this stuff. I think my next quip was going to be something like, we're Salesforce. So, of course, nothing ever changes and we don't buy companies or anything.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. So, yeah. You know, we can speak honestly about that. You know, we tend to, you know, have a new company every, you know, 6 months or so. You know, I don't know what the actual statistics are around that. But the point being is, you know, we have to adapt to the scale of the company because, you know, this company's not going to, it wasn't going to stay where it was. And so, you know, we've seen it grow and we've kind of ran into some issues with the existing kind of architecture that enabled both internal and external customers to kind of, customize their experiences as the requirements of their business kind of grew.
Right. Because I could imagine that complexity is going in a couple of dimensions. One, you're getting new personas and new users who have new use cases, possibly needs for components that were never dreamed of back in the days of the sales cloud.
Yeah.
But then you've also got like MuleSoft and Heroku. Like sometimes we buy a company and like our users probably don't even know that like that new feature that it just rolled out was actually, you know, a purchase that we made 2 years ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then we've got Heroku, we've got MuleSoft, we've got companies that have like these really distinct brands to them. So I would imagine that's a whole other dimension where they have their own design concepts that aren't necessarily lining up to that Salesforce Blue.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think you're exactly right. Like those kind of feature requirements and feature requests of the personas for that individual to kind of be most productive, you know, in their day-to-day job, you know, the services that Salesforce wants to provide for our customers, like it's going to be unique to that product, right? But then on the same, on the flip side of all of that, like that product, though it might be built on the Salesforce platform and take advantage of the services that we are providing, you know, there are scenarios where like they want to maintain some of their brand integrity, right?
Right,
like,
right.
It's important to them.
Yeah.
And it's important for us to enable them to be able to kind of communicate, you know, the intention of their identity as well, regardless of the fact that they may be building on the Salesforce platform.
Right. Okay. So then we'll get to the other star of the show. What are styling hooks and how do they help this adoption problem?
Yeah, that's so styling hooks was, you know, I think given some of the problem areas that I've been talking about a little bit, was our solution to enabling customers to keep that brand integrity and be able to kind of customize their experiences that are tailored to the personas of the people that are using their product, right?
Right.
So this was conceptualized, when was it? Maybe we started initially talking about it probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. And it the reason where that kind of came about was the introduction of the Lightning Web Components. And Lightning Web Components, you know, we believe and feel that that is the framework of the future for the way that our customers will build on the Salesforce. It gives a lot of benefits. And with that, it enables us to take advantage of the standard specifications set by the standards body of the, like the W3C, for example.
Gotcha.
And one of the critical functionalities that provides this is this concept called CSS custom properties.
Okay.
And CSS custom properties will enable us to do exactly what those design tokens kind of did for us. But instead of it, us having to rely on a tool like Theo to kind of generate these platform specific tokens, you know, if a product is being built on the web platform, say just any web browser, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it, you know, even down to your phone, where the behind the scenes, that's still a web, half of your applications that you might be using, even like your Safari on your iPhone or whatever, you know, that's still a web browser.
Right.
You know, that takes advantage of that specification. And so we're storing those name and value pairs now in CSS custom properties. But in addition to that, it enables us to allow for just greater customization.
Okay.
For our customers' components that they build. And then also if they're using such things as like the Lightning based components that I believe we'll be open sourcing here shortly. But
yes, I think last I talked with, I think it was Kevin Hill, like many of them are open sourced. And then the path forward is new components will be open sourced first as much as possible and then brought back to the platform as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah. And, you know, I might get a little technical here.
Please do.
So one of the benefits that Styling Hooks enable us to do is through the specification of web components is this concept of encapsulation and kind of native shadow boundaries.
Okay.
So if you use the LWC framework as is off platform, you will have the native shadow boundaries turned on, right? And there's a slight problem with when native shadow boundaries get turned on is it blocks cascading of CSS styles from getting into your component, which is great, right? Like that's what you want. You want to have some level of protection so some other component on your page doesn't change something within your component, thus like breaking in or changing the integrity of it. But one thing that CSS custom properties, which is the styling hooks are built upon, it is it can penetrate through shadow boundaries, which is fantastic, because then for us we can still maintain that central source of truth that says, like, you know, the color of my buttons across my whole system are Salesforce blue, for example. But regardless of if you're using styling hooks outside of LWC or within LWC, you'll still get the same benefits that, you know, by changing that one value, you can do it through, you know, like JavaScript, or you can do it through a tool like Theo, for example. But basically you can just target one of the styling hooks that are exposed within your component, and then you can start modifying the properties of that look and feel of that component in a supported way. And I think that's a critical part, is the fact that like we're finally offering a supported solution for you to change, customize the look and feel of your component and have it completely separate from, no more like hard coding values into your component. You know, all your customizations can be taken, you know, off platform, on platform, it doesn't matter. So I think it's going to provide real value for people feeling confident that they can make the customizations that they need to their component to meet their brand.
Yeah. When we had talked about this earlier, you described this as like boxes with freedom.
Yes.
So it's like kind of define that a little bit for me. Like when I'm thinking about that box, what's the size and the shape of the box? Is it the component, the page, the application, my whole system? And then what kind of freedom are you giving me?
Yeah. So right now, within this latest release, I believe it's Winter 21, we're enabling customers to target specific components. So and that's the limitation of it right now. So we do have plans to expose what we're going to be referring to as global styling hooks in the future. And I know I can talk about that because it's definitely on our roadmap and radar.
Right.
No need for any forward-thinking
statements. Safe harbor, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, but I think that what that will enable our customers to do is, say, make application-wide changes versus right now where we're just enabling the kind of contextual scope down to the component. So we'll provide styling hooks, say for Lightning button, which you can kind of change holistically, or you can target a specific button on your page and kind of customize it that way. Or we have a, I think we released, let me see, about 12 components in this release. So I think the expectation is that list will grow over time. But this is kind of a, our, hey, we're going to roll out this feature. We're rolling out in a under a beta tag. So there is, it might not have all the properties exposed that some of our customers might require, but we're looking for feedback from our customers about what are the things that they're trying to do. And we want to take that into consideration. I think over time, we'll move more of our styling hooks into GA state, and they will be widely supported across our ecosystem.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, baby steps. A great idea when rolling out new ideas. But I think I want to just level set for everybody that's like, this sounds kind of small in scope, but the reality is this is kind of huge. Like, people will be able to redesign and rebrand things to fit their needs and their logo and their brand and all that kind of stuff, and still get the benefit of, you know, the structure of the design system, the accessibility of the components from the design system. They get all the pros, and you're removing one of the big negatives.
We see it as, especially from a long-term strategy perspective, as it's going to be a game changer when it comes to being able to kind of customize your components to your need. Because what we want to do is we want to stop the it's kind of like, you know, taking a hammer and, like, you know, we don't want to have you smash through the component to kind of do what you want, right?
to force it to, right, yeah, just yeah, shove the square,
like,
peg
we
into the
want
round
to yeah. We want to expose these services to our customers that enable them to keep the integrity of their component, or keep the integrity of a Lightning component that they might be using, and have the confidence that they can make those customizations that they need, right? And so, though it's, our initial rollout is small in scope, I would imagine in a couple releases, it will be massive in scope, and it will be touching many of our products.
Gotcha.
And a lot of our verticals that we have within the ecosystem.
Well, and there's an internal example that we can bring up, and one that everybody listening would be familiar with, which is Trailhead itself, like the website built on top of SLDS. But I think the technical term that I saw on a slide somewhere is that it's working right now through lots and lots of tokens.
Yes, lots and lots and lots.
So like, what are some specific advantages that, like, the Trailhead team, the Trailhead design team?
Well, I think with the Trailhead's situation is they're currently built on a platform not on LWC.
Right.
They're actually using React at the moment. The current product is. And so their goals and their intentions are, they want to use LWC, they want to use the benefits of that framework, and then also move away from, I think, the bloat of their current implementation. You know, everyone wants to reduce their code size and, you know, optimize, right? And, you know, and it should, rightfully so. Like, Trailhead should be fast, should be, you know, it should be easy for our developers working on that product to be able to kind of customize to meet the Trailhead look and feel, right? Like, it's very unique. Everyone knows what the Trailhead, you know.
Right. And this would kind of allow them to keep those design decisions they've made with React and reduce it down to a subset of CSS that can just kind of
write exactly on top of LWC. So they can basically get a Lightning component or build their own Lightning component, and it will just come with the styling hooks baked inside of it. And so basically what they can do is what we expect, or what we're doing is, they can manage just a single source of truth. So they would just have a single file or specific customizations kind of scope to their components that they can have the confidence that, you know, their button's always going to look like that Trailhead button, right? And it will be the nice, succinct, compact. You know, they won't have to do anything crazy to kind of get it to work.
I think it's interesting, and you probably have like maybe a front row or second row seat to, like, because the nice thing about standards is that you get to see this not so far off future where like the browsers are doing all the cool tricks for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. Like we can reduce our dependencies, right? Like mm-hmm. We don't have to have so much syntactic sugar on top of our LWC framework, because we'll just have the browser kind of doing that heavy lifting for us. And it's going to be it's the closest thing to the metal as you can get, right?
So right.
It's only going to make things faster. You know, there's certain things that, you know, we'll want to provide, you know, that our customers can still take advantage of. You know, you're still going to get all of the security features that Salesforce has come to expect with the way that we kind of mm-hmm. build our components, and you'll still get kind of your data management and all that type of stuff. But mm-hmm. like what you get is you're just going to get a faster experience, and you're going to be able to customize that experience way faster. And due to the fact that, you know, Sandling Hooks is dependent or built upon CSS custom properties, like, mm-hmm. you know, you can use JavaScript to kind of change the value of that on the fly. So you say you want to store, you know, your initial property in a styling hook for an animation, and then, you know, animate that over time, depending on, you know, how your customer is kind of experiencing the product. Like that, right. that will be easy to do, where that yeah. was really difficult to do before.
right.
you know, yeah. So, you know, I can't stress enough just kind of the value and the benefits that, like, just moving to a standards-based approach is going to kind of give our customers.
Yeah, totally. Side note, if I ever join a K-pop band, I'm going to insist that the name is Syntactic Sugar.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
And that's our show. And before we go, I did ask Brandon after his favorite non-technical hobby. And once again, like a lot of people who are going through this age of the pandemic, well, he likes to get outside.
I just had a daughter, you know, nine months ago now. So I've been watching and raising her grow, and like watching her grow through this time at home.
Oh, wow.
But in addition to that, like, I like to get out and stay active. So yeah. I've actually been, you know, for a couple of years now, I really got into running, which is like some people might think that I'm like a masochist and like, why do you do that? But it's something that I really enjoy to do, because I think, you know, yeah. with all the stresses that we got going on, you know, I like to kind of have some alone time. And that is the perfect activity for me to do, just going on a nice long run. And, you know, that's something that I don't think will ever get old for me. So it's kind of weird. It's a hobby, but it is a hobby of mine, right?
Right, right. No, I've seen some people. It's almost like, you know, somebody gets that one tattoo and then they have like a whole arm sleeve going on.
Yeah.
Like I've seen people who are like, yeah, I'm going to get into running. And then like 2 years later, like, yeah, I'm going to do a marathon. I'm like, how?
Yeah.
Oh, I did that. Addicted?
I did that. Yeah. Nice. It was weird. You know, I tried to do like an organized race when we were able to, or when they were still around, gotcha. You know, every month. So
I want to thank Brandon for the great conversation and information. Of course, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this podcast, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. I'll talk to you next week.